So my name's Becca. I'm one of the staff here at Maybridge Community Church. And it's a real privilege just to be able to continue looking at the book of 1 Corinthians with you. And if you're a guest or fairly new to faith, then I'll just catch you up on where we've been and what we've been doing. 1 Corinthians is a letter that a guy called Paul, a church leader from years ago, wrote to a church in Corinth. And he wrote this letter, which is actually quite long, and so long we've been going through it for months. We're nearly at the end. And this is a particularly good bit. But he goes through talking to this church about how to do church well, how to be good to each other, how to be family together. He talks about how to get on in our marriages. He talks about how to get on in your worship. He talks about all kinds of things. Talking about how to do church, real life church. What does it look like? What does it mean? How does it look? How does it sound? How does it feel? How do we do it well? And we've got to a part which is, so like the whole letter is almost broken up if you know really went into it, into sections. And there are different sections. I'm looking at behavior, and we're in the middle, literally in the middle, of what's almost a mini essay about how to do worship, how to, you know, do things in services like this, how to do it. And the chapter that we're looking at, it's right slap bang in the middle of three little mini sections that have looked at worship and how to do it and looked at things like spiritual gifts and all these incredible things that God gives you. Then there's a chapter we're looking at today, and then there are three more. So it kind of sits at the pinnacle, at the height of this section. And it's a chapter that you will have heard almost undoubtedly, even if you've never set foot in church before. Even if you've just been to school and just occasionally heard bits, or it gets put out on social media by people who don't even know God. It's just one of those phrases, one of those parts that is particularly well known because it talks about love. It talks about love. It's the kind of passage that so often gets read out or preached on at weddings, even if people aren't Christians, because it's beautiful. And I love that it sits at this center of how do we do church? How do we worship? What does it look like? And Paul comes to the middle of it all and he says, you know what? Sitting at the center of everything is love, actually. That's what matters. That's what makes a difference. And I'm actually going to dip back into the very end of 1 Corinthians 12, the chapter that we've been looking at the last couple of weeks, in order to lead up to it. Because in the chapters that lead up to it, you see, and Matt has been talking to us about this for a couple of weeks really brilliantly, we've been looking at all these spiritual gifts that God gives the people who follow him. Amazing things, supernatural gifts, the ability to speak in other languages, other human languages, angelic languages, the ability to have words of knowledge, to just know something that you couldn't humanly know, the gift of prophecy, the ability to speak on God's behalf into people's lives. Astonishing, amazing things. And God bestows all these incredible gifts upon his people. And then he carries on in that chapter to talk about how actually we're each given different kinds of gifts and talents. And it's a bit like a body. And actually, as a church and as God's people, we need all the different people with all the different talents. And some of those are more visible and some of those are more hidden. And it's easy to think that we really want this gift because that looks really cool. I'd love to be able to go around healing everybody, or I'd love to be able to go around and speak other languages without ever sitting in a French lesson again. That would be awesome. You know, and he said, actually, don't go hankering. Just be so delighted with what God has given you because he's created you for a purpose. So there's been this whole build-up of what we've been looking at and what we've been leaning into. And then Paul finishes this section on all these incredible gifts that God gives and how we need to pull together and use them together and value each other and value ourselves. And he finishes by saying this, so you should earnestly desire the most helpful gifts. He's like, it's good to chase after these things. In some translations, it says, actually, you know, you can be zealous for these gifts, but there's a better way. There's another thing. So he's been building up the excitement about all these amazing things. He says, but let me tell you about the thing that is best of all. And the thing that is best of all about this is that it's not just that you get to find out which of these gifts you get as your individual self, because this one is for everybody. This is the underlying foundation for them all. And then he carries on. I'm just going to read it through and then we'll go back and look at it. And he says this, if I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. if I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I might boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It doesn't envy. It does not boast. It isn't proud. It does not dishonor others. It's not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, and always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. And when I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. And when I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection, as in a mirror, and then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. It's a really beautiful passage, and I'm very, very sure that everybody probably has heard it, or at least part of it at some point in the past. It's all about love. It's a to-do list of how to do love. It's an elevating of this as the most important thing. But it's really important to know what he's talking about when he talks about love. You see, if you go back to the original language, which I haven't done a lot of studies in, if I'm really honest with you, but I know this bit, there are a number of words in the Greek language that they used for love, and they meant different things. And one of those words was eros. And eros is a kind of love that is like a passionate love. It might be a romantic love. It might be like a really zealous love, like you're really passionate about the Labour Party or Brexit or something or veganism or whatever it is. But that's kind of like eros love. It's like this burning passion in you to be just, ooh, about something. That's eros. He's not talking about that. Okay, so that was a little bit of information of what it's not. Here's another one, phileo love. Like this is like, I'm just aware that Matt's probably saying I'm pronouncing these words wrong, but so we'll move past that. Just imagine, all right? This is like a family love. This is the kind of love you have for your friends. It's the kind of love that you have for people who love you back, and you've built a relationship, and you enjoy their company, and you look out for them, and you've got their back, and it's a mutual kind of thing. He's not talking about that kind of love either. He's talking about agape love. He's talking about something that is so much more than either of those things. And it's hard to imagine something that is so much more than either of those things. But what he's talking about is something that is pure, something that is unconditional. He's talking about the kind of love that the Bible tells us God has for us. This kind of love that goes the extra mile, the kind of love that is unconditional, the kind of love that is for everybody. And there's a few little things I wanted to talk about as we looked at it. You see, when you look at this agape love, and it's something more, this is the first thing that really stands out. It is for everybody. When you think about Jesus' love, it was for everybody. It doesn't matter who they are or how much they loved him back or what they've done to deserve it or anything like that. It's this love that is universal. It's for everybody. And as you read through the Bible and the biggest story of all that goes on, Paul tells people, Jesus tells people, this is about loving your neighbor. It's about loving your enemy. It's about loving people who are really hard to love. This kind of love. This love isn't dependent on them being kind to you. This love isn't dependent on a big bunch of flowers or a nice, you know, check coming through the door. This love isn't about people bigging you up and you feel really good about yourself. Those people are easy to love. This is a different kind of love. And when you look at what it is to love your enemy, I came across this quote the other day by a guy called Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was a German pastor in Germany. In the run-up to World War II and during World War II. And he knew what it meant to have enemies. He was an incredible man, a theologian, but who stood up against the Nazi regime and paid the ultimate price in the end. But he explained his enemies like this. He says, by our enemies, Jesus means those who are quite intractable and utterly unresponsive to our love, who forgive us nothing when we forgive them all, who requite our love with hatred and our service with derision. And as we sit and as we read that, I think we might have some people in our head. Don't name them out loud. That would be bad. But I think we can think of people like that. We can think of the people we've tried to be kind to when they never responded, We can think of the people who've actually been quite unkind to us, whether it was back when we were kids, or it's in the workplace, or in our family, really close to home. The people we tried to make love us and they didn't. People we kept forgiving and they never seemed to have the same back. You know, actually loving those people, that's quite hard. It's quite hard. Surely this isn't what Paul is calling us to. Surely it's not about this. But here's the second thing that we discover about agape love. It's a bit of a royal command, right? This is a bit of an edict from God. This is one of the things that is a non-negotiable. In fact, John, another of the great leaders from the early church, said this: the command we have from Christ is blunt. Loving God includes loving people. You've got to love both. This isn't one of those ones we go, yeah, I'll have that kind of faith, thank you. Or I'll have that kind of Christianity. I'll follow Jesus, but I am not loving them. No way. They disagree with me on Brexit. They've got a different political leader. They think Boris Johnson should be prime minister, right? I don't know what it is. That's not me putting out a political statement. That's just me using an example. They don't want Boris Johnson to be prime minister. There you are. And I've covered all bases. It's all right. Right? You know, you go, I can't love them. They're crazy. They're nuts. They're mean. They've been horrible to me. I can't love them. How do these two things hold together? Well, some of the answer to that is because actually it's just about learning to be like Jesus. And we don't get to be like Jesus the minute we start to follow him. It's a lifelong journey, but we have the most beautiful example in Jesus. But he was really clear about this as well. My command to you is this: love each other as I have loved you. And when we stop, and when we think about the reality of that, it's sobering. You see, Jesus never asks us to do something he didn't do himself. He doesn't. Jesus has gone before us in everything. I mean, the very fact that the God of the universe, creator of heaven and earth, should choose to come down and live as a man in the first place is extraordinary. That out of his great love for these rotten, wretched human beings, he came to be one of them. That he would walk on earth. You know, that he'd subject himself to just living like a human being, all contained in a human body. That he'd experience hunger and thirst, stub his toe sometimes. You know, have people be mean to him at school. Don't know if he went to school. You know, that he'd grow up, that he'd get sick sometimes. That he'd grow up and people would misunderstand him and not know who he was. That he'd have friends let him down and betray him. That he'd get arrested for something that was true but was not arrestable. That he should allow people to take him and try him in a court for pretending to be God when he really was. That he should allow them to do that. That he should allow them to beat him and whip him and march him up a hill with a cross and then nail him to it. That he should sit there on that cross and not call down angels of, you know, armies of angels to release him, but that he should stay there because he loved us that much, that he was prepared to do all of that. That is a love. Like the getting sick and the being bullied stuff, that's going ahead of us in life. But when he allowed those nails to go into his hands, that was him going ahead of us in love. He said, this is how you love one another. You lay down your life for your friends. This is what you do. I'm not asking you to do anything I won't do first. I'm asking you to love like me. And it carries on. You see, actually, it's the highest gift. I'm going to come circle back to this a little bit later on. But we've been learning about all these incredible gifts that God can give the people who follow him. You know, amazing, supernatural, mind-blowing gifts that are so exciting. But Paul finishes this section by saying, the greatest of these is love. If you're hankering after all of these other things, that's brilliant. But understand this, they're nothing without love. Love is the highest gift. That's the greatest gift. It was the greatest gift on the cross. It's the greatest gift in your life day by day. It's the greatest gift that you can give to anybody else. It is the greatest gift. And the beauty of it all is that as we are called to love all of these people, even the ones who don't look like us, the ones who don't sound like us, the ones who don't think like this, the ones who aren't nice to us, we're called to love them like Jesus did, which was extreme. And we sit there and we think, I can't do this. This is beyond me. We're given another gift again because we're never expected to do it in our strength. We love because he first loved us, and in that love, he offered and promised to give us his Holy Spirit, to come and live in us, so that actually, when we love other people, it's not us, it's him. You see, this is the thing. Going out and loving other people isn't about going out and just being really good. You know, I think sometimes we can wake up in the morning and think, well, I've got to go out and I've got to be really kind, and I've got to be really patient, and I've got to be really this, and I've got to be really generous, and I've got to be, you know, and it's all these tick list things that we've got to do. God goes, no, it's about me. You see, when you're filled with God's love, it starts to leak out and it starts to go all over everybody else around you in the nicest way. It's beautiful. We're not expected to do it. It's not about trying harder. It's about learning how to be loved so that we can love. So let's go back to that passage as it is. And it says this: if I speak in the tongues of men or of angels but don't have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. You can have all the prophecy and all the knowledge. You can have faith that moves mountains, but without love, it's nothing. He's saying, do you know what? You could have all these astonishing gifts. You could be completely supernatural. You could go around healing people. You could go around having, you know, knowing things that nobody else knows. When he refers to, you know, I can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, he's speaking to a people group and a culture that really valued knowledge and understanding. He's saying, you could know it all. You could be the wisest, cleverest person. You could win all the pub quizzes. You could go on all the quizzes on TV. You could do all of that. You could know everything. We might never be able to catch you out with a question. But if you haven't got love, you've got nothing. You've got nothing. It means nothing. It's empty. It's hollow. And then he carries on and he kind of moves from this idea of, you know, all the gifts that you might have and how amazing you might appear. And he says, you could even be really sacrificial. You could give everything away. You could give it all away. You could, you know, transform the lives of your community. You could be out there day in, day out, burning yourself out for them, making sure people have got great lives, making sure people, you know, experience all this stuff that's going on around them. But if you haven't got the right motivation for that, well, actually, he's really strong in the words that he used. If you go into the Message version, it says this: no matter what I say, what I believe, and what I do, I'm bankrupt without love. I don't think you could say it more clearly than that. It doesn't really need me to expand upon it. But here's the thing. If love doesn't sit at the center of all those things, if giving your life away, if you're giving all your stuff away, actually is secretly motivated by looking really good, by being able to go, look what I did, you know, boasting, getting to heaven one day going, God, did you see how much I did for you? Then it's bankrupt, it's empty, it's hollow, it's nothing. No, love needs to be the motivation underneath it all. Love needs to be what's really going on. And love sometimes looks like giving everything you have to help the poor. Love sometimes looks like speaking out and speaking knowledge into people's lives. Love sometimes looks like that. But if those things don't have love as their foundation, they're pointless, they're empty, they're nothing. And it's one of those things that, you know, as I sit and I think, you know, I was sat and I was listening a couple of weeks ago to Matt talking about all the different gifts and thinking, oh, I so wish I had that one. But I wonder what actually the one thing we would ask of God was. If we came to God and, you know, this isn't how it works. This is more like a Disney film. But if you came to God and you had one wish, you had one request, I wonder what it would be. You know, the Bible says that years and years ago, there's an amazing king called Solomon. He asked for wisdom. Could have asked for riches and he's praised because he asked for wisdom. But I think that actually the thing to ask for is love. And as we take that love out into the world, as we look at the relationships that we're in, Paul gives us a bit of a checklist for what it looks like. This is what love looks like. It never gives up. It cares more for others than for self. It doesn't want what it doesn't have. It doesn't get jealous. It doesn't strut. Doesn't think it's so amazing. You know, we've seen people like that, haven't we? We know what that can feel like. It doesn't have a swelled head. It doesn't force itself on others. And this is a really important one because I think sometimes we mistake loving other people with wanting other people. We sit there and we think, I love you. I like you a lot. I really want you in my life and I'm going to do anything to make that happen. And what that doesn't include is making sure that that other person is happy with that. Because actually we've put our needs, our desires for their company above their needs and their requirements. It's not always me first. It doesn't fly off the handle. It doesn't keep score of the sins of others. It doesn't revel when others grovel. That's an important one as well, isn't it? You know, we might need to make up when we've fallen out. We might need to have apologies and we might need those things, but we shouldn't need other people to grovel to make it better. It takes pleasure in the flowering of truth. It puts up with anything. Trusts God always. Always looks for the best. Never looks back, but keeps going to the end. What a wonderful love. What a wonderful, beautiful kind of love that is. Imagine the world if that's how people treated each other day in, day out. And we're able to do it. You see, because that whole passage is love is this, love is that, love is the other. And you could put God's name in where it says love. You could say God never gives up. God cares more for others than for himself. God doesn't want what it doesn't have. God doesn't strut. God doesn't have a swelled head. This is about being like God. This is about being like Jesus. This is about being his ambassadors. Everywhere that we go, wearing his love, taking it out there, being just like Jesus. It is the greatest gift. You know, we can sit here and I don't know what it is that you think that you need in life. I don't know. It might be a husband or a wife. It might be a career. It might be just a comfortable bank account which feels safe. Nothing wild, but just comfortable. It might be a nice car. It might be a little bit of popularity or success. A bit of notoriety. Maybe not notoriety, maybe fame. Notoriety is never really what most people want. You know, it might be all sorts of things. And somehow, somewhere in us, we go, oh, we know that's not a very good thing to be desire. We know that there's meant to be a more holy or special thing. And that's a little bit of what this passage is talking to. But it's saying it's even more than that. You know, as you chase after Jesus, as you go after him, know this. The greatest gift that God gave the world wasn't, you know, a great miracle where he fed 5,000 people. It wasn't even raising Lazarus from the dead. Wasn't, you know, healing crippled people. It wasn't those things. They're amazing. The greatest gift that God gave his people wasn't supernatural gifts to carry around with them. The greatest gift God gave people wasn't even actually each other. The greatest gift that God ever gave anybody ever was the gift of his love, because he chose to. Didn't have to. The world had turned his back on him. All of us, whether we like to think it or not, from the minute we were born until the day that we decided to turn around and do something different, we turn our backs on God. We go, you're this, you know, we have to kind of know that he's this great, amazing God. And some of us just go, yeah, but I think this is more important, thank you. I'm going to focus on this, or I'm going to focus on that. And in the midst of all of that, God still so loved the world that he sent his son to die for us. In the midst of all of that, it's the most extraordinary gift. And some of us sit in the room and we can't even imagine being loved like that. We can't imagine it. But it's the gift that we need to keep coming back for to and asking for more. A little bit like Oliver, it's not rude to keep asking God for more and more and more of his love. You see, the thing is, some of us will sit here and we know that we're empty. We know it. Some of us will sit here and think, do you know what? I grew up in a family that was quite dysfunctional and I never really knew what love looked like and I struggle with it. I struggle to be intimate and vulnerable with people. I do need to experience love, but I don't know how, and I find that quite frightening. And God's sat there going, I've got it all ready for you. It's gift wrapped. It's got a bow on the top. It's beautiful. I want to give it to you today. I want to give it to you tomorrow. I've got enough to last you a lifetime and beyond. And we just need to keep coming back and going, can I have a bit more? Can I have some more? Can I have some more? Can I have some more? And let some of these other things that we need and we think we want, and let it go. Because out of God's great love, he'll always provide what we need. But it's the love that sits at the heart of it. And even those of us who have had lovely families and lovely lives and are full of it, actually, we still need more. We still need more of God's love. We still need to be filled up day in, day out, to get up in the morning and before we go anywhere, to focus on who we are, child of God, loved by him, precious and honored in his sight. Because when we begin our day in that place, the rest of our day looks totally different, doesn't it? I don't know what you wake up and think about first thing in the morning. For all of us, it'd be all kinds of different things, different stresses, different worries, different excitements, different joys. But what if we all began our day focusing in on this? And out of that went, oh, and what shall I do with it today? Where shall I go? And some of you might even be sitting in the room going, I don't really know what you're talking about. I've just walked in for the first time. I don't know who this is. And I've got a really important message for you. I don't know who you are and where you've come from or anything else, but I know this. God loves you. He loves you. He loves you with a love that knows no end, a love that does not give up, a love that does not have a stopping point or a limit that goes, oh, well, after this, that's it. He doesn't do that. He has this love that says, even if you never love me back, even if you won't look in my face, even if you use my name as a swear word, even if you pretend I don't exist, even then I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it. My love is extraordinary. My love is bigger, and my love will wait in case one day you choose to change your mind. It will always be here. It will always be available, and you're welcome. It's the most extraordinary love, and you're welcome. And I'd love to talk to you more about it if that's what you want. But I want to finish with a little passage, actually, from another letter that Paul wrote to another church in another place at another time. And it's this resounding theme that just runs through everything he writes, really, that Paul talks about. It's really familiar to what we've just read, but this is to another church. And he says this, so, chosen by God for this new life of love, dress in the wardrobe God picked out for you. Compassion, kindness, humility, quiet strength, discipline. Be even-tempered, content with second place, quick to forgive an offense. Forgive as quickly and completely as the Master forgave you. And you see, as you look at that part, you think, oh yeah, that looks like the same things. This is how we recognize love. This is how we do it. This is how we go out there and love people that we find difficult. This is what it looks like. But I love this last line in this translation. It says, and regardless of what else you put on, wear love. It's your basic all-purpose garment. Never be without it. I love it. It's like not going out without remembering to put your pants on before you go out in the morning. All right? It's that important. You need to do it. But then change the analogy, because in your head, I want you to imagine the truth is that when we put this on in the morning, it's really intentional. We get up in the morning and we choose. It's the basic bit of, you know, it's the foundation part of our wardrobe. It might be your pair of jeans. It might be your favorite jacket. It might be whatever it is. But we choose to put it on. We choose to pull it over our head. We choose to stick our arms in, both of the arms, and to cover ourselves with this garment of love. And that is about receiving this love that God has for us and just beginning the day by being steeped in it, being covered in it, knowing that that's our identity, knowing that that's who we are, knowing that's what we were created to be, this beautiful, loved child of God. And then to carry that love out with us everywhere that we go, for everyone to see, like ambassadors for the King, carrying this love like a badge that comes out and says, I am loved, and this love is for everybody. This love is so full in me that it makes me strong enough and confident and brave enough to be able to do whatever it takes to love you. It means that I am strong enough and brave enough and I just know who I am enough to be able to step out and do something really courageous, to step out and change the world, to step out and love you even though you don't love me back. And it makes me strong enough and brave enough to be able to tell you that you need this love as much as I do, to be able to share this love with you. It's extraordinary. And I've nearly finished. But I want us to finish by knowing that day in, day out, we need to wear this love, to be soaked in this love, to be filled to the brim in this love, to wake up each morning and say, Holy Spirit, just fill me again with this love of God. It's the greatest of the gifts that God gives us. And out of it comes everything else. And without it, the rest of it is rubbish. This is what sits at the heart of it. This is what sits at the heart of who we are and all that we can be and all that we can do for other people. So I think the band are going to start playing. But actually, just where we are sitting for a moment, I just wonder if we could just stop. Maybe close your eyes. And just take whatever posture it is. And for you, it might be that you like to just put your hands out. But let's just take a moment to invite God to reveal something to us again. Because no matter how long we've known Jesus or haven't, if we ask God to show us his love, he will do. To fill us up with his love, he will do. God, we come to you and we know that you are, the Bible says that you are love. It's your very essence. It's the heart of who you are. It's your identity. And that because that is your identity, it means that our identity is loved. Loved with a D on the end. We are loved. It's who we are. Known by you, loved by you, chosen by you. And God, we just pray that actually at this moment, in this place, in this peace and this quiet, you'll fill us again with the Spirit. You'll fill us again with your love. Help us to have a fresh revelation of how you see us, how you hold us, how you love us.